This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we are going full force after Labor Day into September with discussions about Sully, When the Bow Breaks, The Wildlife, The Disappointments Room, Complete Unknown, and Our Little Sister. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Well, it's not really news. It's a slow news week for movies. I mean, always in regular news, there's going to be other stuff happening in elections and politics and Syria and everything else that's going on in the world. But if you're just talking movies, September is notoriously slow for movies. It's like right after Christmas, when pretty much nothing is going on in terms of ramping things up. You've still got award season a little bit down the road. You've got the tent poles for the fall and winter down the road, and we're way past the big movies of the summer. So right now, there's not a whole lot going on. So I'm going to take this time to address something dear to my heart when it comes to movies. Now, we've all heard in many platforms that there's a war on Christmas. It's a little early to be talking about that, sure, because it's September. But a lot of people feel that Christmas is being assailed. Now, I'm not going to get into that, because it all depends on how you define Christmas, whether it's that secular sort of everybody enjoying it with Santa Claus and Christmas trees, or if you're going strictly to the religious practices, or if you're just going and being politically correct and saying happy holidays versus Christmas. I don't care about that. Where there's a war, it's on Halloween, if there's anything else. And it's not because people don't celebrate it and people don't get into the spirit. I love the fact that you can see Halloween outlet stores and you can see horror movies throughout the year. And I love the fact that this summer, in fact, was a great time for horror movies. When you had Conjuring 2, you had Don't Breathe, you had Lights Out. Yeah, you had stuff like The Darkness, which was terrible. But you had these three pretty powerful horror movies, and they all came out in the summer months, which is kind of unheard of. Normally, you get those at sort of an off season, like January or September or October. I'm talking about the way we celebrate things. There are stations now on the radio that are playing Christmas music. There are Christmas stores that are open. There are Christmas DVDs and elements you can buy in the store. I went to the dollar store, which is near my house, just a couple days ago, and I couldn't find very many Halloween decorations. They really wait until after Labor Day. Everything's back to school until Labor Day. And then they take out the Halloween decorations, and that's great. But what really curds my cheese is when I go to a store and they've got Christmas decorations encroaching upon Halloween decorations, and it's not even Columbus Day yet. Christmas encroaches on Halloween to the point of you don't even get turkey. You don't even get Turkey Day. It just goes straight from Halloween to Christmas. And I remember last year, Halloween, I believe, fell on a Saturday. And quite literally the next day, the stores had switched everything over to Christmas. There wasn't even like a, hey, here's our clearance items for Halloween. They got rid of everything. I was talking to the manager who worked there, and they just swept everything into the back. And they went full force on Christmas stuff. Now, I love Christmas. I decorate for Christmas. I go crazy at Christmas. But I also go crazy on Halloween. And because of this, once you get to Halloween, it just gets shoved to the side. And it gets shoved to the side a week or two before it happens. So I'm getting a jump on Halloween. I am getting a jump on horror movies. And I am going to be start watching my horror movies in September. Every year, I try to watch a horror movie a day throughout the month of October. And I'm going to start early this year. Over Labor Day weekend, I had a 24-hour horror movie marathon. There's a whole bunch of events around the country, and in particular near me, there's a 24-hour horror movie marathon in Columbus, Ohio on October 15th and 16th. You've got stuff going on in Chicago. You got stuff going on in Cleveland. You've got stuff going on all over the place. You're getting these revivals of movies. You're getting these scary movie sets of films that are coming out. This is a great time if you want to go out and experience horror movies with a group and with friends. There are plenty of opportunities. There's also conventions. There's horror weekends. Those are things that people who are like me, who sort of get into their heyday now, even before the nights get really long and it gets really cool and the leaves start falling off the trees, we can start celebrating the horror movies early. So, like I said, this weekend I watched the original House of Wax in 3D. I watched John Carpenter's The Fog. I watched the Japanese movie House. I watched the old Universal film, The Old Dark House. Let's stop the war on Halloween and start watching horror movies now. And if you really want to, you got Don't Breathe in the theaters. If you want to check out Morgan, it's in the theaters. And there's also a horror-ish movie coming out this weekend called The Disappointments Room. So I'm jumping in there. If anyone has a suggestion, a horror movie that you think I should see, I know I ask for suggestions all the time and don't always get to them, but please send me an email, hit me up on Twitter, find me on Facebook, say, hey, check out this horror movie. Now, if I've already seen it, I'm not going to rewatch it probably. But if it's a brand new movie, that's great. No found footage, and I'm not into the torture porn. But if you got something that's bizarre and different and new, or it's old and not a whole lot of people have remembered it, like it's a forgotten classic, let me know. I will try and get to it, and I'm going to cover it. I'm going to start covering them this month because horror movies, to me, are important. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Max Steel, which is a superhero movie being funded by Mattel, and it comes out on October 14th.
Did you do this to me?
No, Max, your father gave you these powers. I'm just here to show you how to use them. Let's get started. Max, you can use your energy in many different ways. You can run faster, be stronger, and I haven't even shown you the best part yet.
What? This is awesome.
You're welcome.
You know, this could go either way. It looks like it's trying to give a serious push to a superhero movie, something like I Am Number 4. But I think what it might fall into is it might fall into the trap of trying to be a little bit too goofy and for kids. Like this little robot that helps them out seems almost too cute. I'm getting shades of Earth to Echo on this one, or that awful Gem in the Holograms last year. Speaking of mixed feelings, let's talk about the next one, Collateral Beauty. This opens on December 16th.
Howard is a brilliant, creative, charismatic guy. He used to love life. Right now, he hates it.
He writes letters.
Who are they to?
Howard doesn't write letters to people. He writes to things.
Who did you write the letter to?
I wrote the letter to death.
Nice to meet you. They're charmed, I'm sure.
People write letters to the universe all the time. Most don't get a personal response, but you are.
I don't want this.
This is Will Smith's current award bait film. Now, before I even talk about the movie, I have to ask, if he does not get an Oscar nomination for this, is Jada Pinkett Smith going to boycott the Oscars again? And what is her bean counting for the number of black people to be nominated for Academy Awards, for her to decide that her husband wasn't nominated because he didn't give the greatest performance, or that her husband wasn't nominated because he was black? I'm sorry, you make a statement like that, like she did last year, where she says, my husband wasn't nominated and neither were any other black people for acting, so I'm going to boycott the award. It just reeked of her saying, you guys didn't give my husband a nomination. You lose so much credibility doing it that way. Anyways, Collateral Beauty, I don't know, this one could go either way. This looks like an interesting, charming, sweet concept in the hands of the right people could be good. But this could also be a disaster. This could be overly cheesy, overly schmaltzy. This could be one of those movies that tries so hard to pull on your heartstrings that it just ends up choking off an artery or something like that. This could be a disastrously weepy, melodramatic film. It could be like Meet Joe Black, which deals with similar things where death actually takes human form and comes around and starts talking to people and having relationships. It's got a lot of great actors involved in it. I don't know. The cheese factor seems to be really high on this one. So we'll see what happens come Christmas time. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be jumping into the movie reviews with Sully and Our Little Sister.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies as I continue with movie review awesomeness from Kevin Carr. And if you listen to the music in the bumpers, I have been playing some Halloween music, getting a jump on the holiday. Don't worry, I'm not going to be playing scary music all the way through September, but we will be celebrating Halloween starting now so that we don't get encroached upon by Thanksgiving or Christmas. But before we start really going full force into celebrating Halloween, let's talk about some movies that are coming out this week. One of them is Sully, which is the Clint Eastwood movie starring Tom Hanks. It tells the story of Captain Chesley Sullenberg, nicknamed Sully, who was the pilot in that U.S. Air's, it's a water landing on the Hudson River back in early 2009. And this is the follow-up to Eastwood's American Sniper, which, of course, was a very controversial movie for some people, and I'll talk about that in a second, but also was an incredibly popular movie, did extremely well when it opened in January, and it got an Academy Award nominations, and it became sort of this political, had a political target on its back over Chris Kyle and over what it means to be a sniper and some of the claims that have been made about him, and also just the way people feel about combat in general. This one is less of an aggressive, polarizing film. But it is made in very much the same way, and I'll get into that in a second. But first, let's play the trailer. The story is about the captain of the U.S. Air flight that crash-landed in the Hudson River in January of 2009, who must answer for his decision in a federal investigation.
No one warned us. No one said you were going to lose both engines at a lower altitude than any jet in history. This was dual engine loss at 2,800 feet, followed by an immediate water landing with 155 souls on board. No one has ever trained for an incident like that.
Our job is to investigate how a plane ended up in the Hudson River.
On the Hudson.
I am not always a Clint Eastwood fan in terms of his directing films. Actually, I think he's great as an actor. I mean, sometimes he just kind of phones it in. But I love seeing him on screen. He doesn't do a whole lot on screen anymore. I mean, he's like 512 years old. But, you know, going back to his old days, back during the Westerns, back during the Dirty Harry days, I remember watching some of the Dirty Harry movies, actually going and seeing them in the theater in the 80s. I've always enjoyed Clint Eastwood as an actor. I've always blown hot and cold with him as a director. Some of his movies, like, for example, American Sniper, I absolutely loved. And other movies, like, say, Jersey Boys, that was one that came out just a couple years ago, it just left me cold. That just seemed like they're directed by an old man. And I think that that worked in something like American Sniper. I thought it worked really, really well because he was not trying to be Michael Bay. There was like one or two scenes of action in the movie, but for as long of a film as that was, it was not about blowing things up and big action sequences. It was about what it was like to be a sniper. And then, of course, being home and dealing with the baggage that he brought back coming home. But it wasn't there to be the next big summer blockbuster in terms of blowing things up. It had a much more somber, realistic, steady hand. And you needed that because in the hands of somebody else, like 13 Hours that came out earlier this year, which was a really good movie, actually, directed by Michael Bay, one of his first ones he's done for a while that's actually been good. 13 Hours was very Michael Bay. It had the explosions, it had the rockets flying overhead, it had the slow motion shots. It's 180 degrees out of phase with American Sniper in terms of how it was directed, telling military heroism stories. The reason this works with Sully is because it is not about this guy feeling sorry for himself. I think in the hands of a different director, Sully would have become him breaking down and crying in the shower. And there's a whole bunch of phone calls with him and his wife, because of course he's in New York and she's back home. And so they're talking to each other in the midst of this media circus over the phone the whole time. But it's not him weeping and screaming, and he doesn't have the Oscar moment, which is kind of cool. That's one of the great things about Tom Hanks now. He's won enough Oscars that he's like, I don't need to have the Oscar moment. I don't need to have the screaming and yelling and crying at the camera. And because that doesn't seem to be the way Sully was as a character. The movie's about a guy who is going through post-traumatic stress disorder. And if you remember how Eastwood handled that in American Sniper, he didn't handle it the same way that PTSD is addressed in most other films from Hollywood. The other films are like wanting to just pound it into your head of our boys are having trouble coming home and they have some severe problems and we need to take care of it. And in essence, by overstating the point, those movies tend to make everybody who returns from combat into a head case who can't even get their shoes on in the morning. Not the case here. This is a guy who's got everything inside. And we're in his head, and it's kind of told a little bit disjointed. And you see him running through the scenarios in the aftermath. And they don't explain this, but you can tell that's what's going on. He's like, well, what if we did it this way? What if we did it this way? What if we did it this way? And of course, you're having the planes crashing. So you get these action moments that please the Warner Brothers executives when they saw the dailies, I'm sure. But what you end up with is you end up with a guy questioning every single second of the experience, but not in an overt way. He doesn't point it out to you. He doesn't say, hey, what if I tried this and then had a flashback? You sometimes come in the middle of a flashback of the plane crashing, realizing that that was one of the scenarios that he was going through in his head. And that's the other thing I liked about this movie. It didn't beat you over the head with certain things. Now, it seems to have missed making all these points, but it really makes these points. You just have to pick up on it. A smart person can watch this movie and get all these points, but Hollywood loves to drill the point home and say to you, this is what the point is. It doesn't do that. It relies on the audience to be smarter, and that's part of the reason why it's so good. And it's the same reason why American Sniper made its points so well, but didn't hammer them home and preach to you through the whole thing, because it just showed it. And it didn't show the PTSD is devastating and destroying his life. It's just something he's dealing with. And this movie is presented in such a way that you really feel like you know what his experience is in the aftermath. And maybe during the thing, because he went into sort of, no pun intended, autopilot mode. And you know what it's like whenever you go and you do something particularly intense or emotionally powerful. You sort of remember it like a dream. You kind of look back on it like everything was a memory. And that's what makes this movie work so well. Now, I think they took a little bit of liberty with the characters and the good guys and the bad guys. It shows New York heroism and American heroism. So many times people get on social media and they say, I don't want to live on this planet anymore, or people suck, or we need to do better, people. What this movie shows is it shows a city, being New York, coming together to help a crisis at that moment without being told, without being bargained with. You get these ferry boat drivers who went out and got the people off the plane. They weren't paid to do that. They were being paid to pilot a ferry over to New Jersey, but they saw this happen and they stepped up to the occasion. And again, they don't point this out to you. You have to figure that out for yourself, but it's all there. The American heroism, the New York heroism, the humanity heroism, and how making a decision, even if it's not the best decision, is better than not making a decision or taking too long. I've gone way too long talking about this movie. I'm actually going to have to bump the review of Our Little Sister to a later segment, simply because there was just so much to say about this film. Sully is a great movie. It is, in my opinion, it's smaller, much more intimate, and doesn't deal with as wide of a scope as, again, no pun intended, as American Sniper. But to me, it's just as good. And it's one of the best ones of the year. Sully rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the films that weren't screened, The Wildlife, When the Bow Breaks, and The Disappointment's Room.
There There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue with the movie reviews. Well, movie previews, actually. I gotta explain what's going on this week. Normally, I work tirelessly. I bend over backwards. I kill myself to go see as many of the major releases that are out there. Usually the way it works is the publicity departments in my local area will hold press screenings. And that is normally how it's done. And I live in Columbus, Ohio, which is not the biggest market in Ohio. I believe it's the biggest city, but it's not the biggest market. And there's ways they figure that out. I think Cleveland's bigger. And also one of the publicity houses up in Cleveland. So they tend to do them locally there before they will do them in Columbus unless they're specifically requested. And as I was going through August, I was looking ahead and I'm like, we're not getting any screenings for the movies that are coming out in the second week of September. We ended up getting the Sully screening, which was great because that is a movie that needs to be seen. And that is a great film. Usually when a studio, especially a studio that normally screens here, when they don't screen here, that usually means they're pulling back. They either don't have the budget or they don't want to put the money behind early screenings because they don't think that word of mouth, at least through the media, is going to help. Or it's a smaller organization that does it. Like the Disappointments Room is run by Rogue. And it's not like run by like Universal as the giant arm or Disney, for example. And then there's movies like When the Bow Breaks, which is a movie from Screen Gems, and Screen Gems only screens the stuff that they really think is going to get bumped in a good way by reviews, and otherwise they hide it. And in fact, a couple years ago, it was that one with Idris Elba and Taraji P. Henson. There always seems to be, the movie studios have figured out that this like second, post-Labor Day is a great time to release a thriller for African Americans. For some reason, people have zeroed in on that marketplace. And that's why you got, was the one, Idris Elba, like, knocked on her door and it was a home invasion kind of movie. And then, like, last year was A Perfect Man, and Michael Lillet was in it, and I forget who the woman was, but it's an all African American cast, and it's always a thriller. And it always comes out now, and they never screen it. In fact, they were going to screen that Idris Elba one, and they pulled the screenings, supposedly because they didn't want anyone giving away the twist, which the twist was, it was probably a really crappy movie that had a certain market that would go see it, and that was it, and one and done. And that seems to be what's happening here. And then The Wildlife, which is the other one, this is just a crummy, canned CG animated film that doesn't hold a candle, the stuff from Pixar or like DreamWorks when they did Kung Fu Panda. This is, you know, maybe every now and then they screen something like The Nut Job, which was a smaller film. So these weren't screened. I sometimes will play hooky. And there have been times, usually in August, September, where I get so exhausted from doing it, I just don't see the movies at the end of the week, and I make something up. But I'm not playing hooky. The industry was playing hooky for me. But that isn't going to stop me from talking about them. So let's just run these down really quick. The Wildlife. The Adventures of Robinson Crusoe is seen from the animal's point of view.
What's he doing?
Building a human nest in the tree.
What do you say we help him out?
Pirates?
This is not good, Mike.
To save their island.
Get him.
They'll have to work together.
Many thanks, Scrubs.
And survive each other.
This could be more complicated than I thought.
Well, that's a bit of a bummer, Mike.
This was originally named Robinson Crusoe. And it got changed to The Wildlife, which I kind of find interesting because Robinson Crusoe should be a recognizable name. Now I realize that little kids don't read that. But the fact that they changed to such a generic title, The Wildlife, doesn't give you any sense of what the movie's about. And it feels like it's these one-off one-liners with animals making body humor jokes. It looks really bad. The animation looks cheap. And it's one thing to take an, like, I remember about 10 years ago when they made the movie Hoodwinked. And that movie was really clever and cool. And they said, look, we can't compete with Pixar. So we're going to use canned animation. That's okay. But we're going to make a really good script. And that's why the original Hoodwinked, the second one sucked. But the original Hoodwinked was really kind of clever. But the wildlife, it reminds me of Nine Lives that came out a couple weeks ago where they didn't screen for anybody. And it just looks like it should have been direct to video and not as a major release. So I'm going to have to say, because it wasn't screened, The Wildlife has to suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's talk about When the Bow Breaks. A couple hire a surrogate for their baby, only to find her becoming a little too attached.
If we do this, we just want to make sure that you and Anna are comfortable with it. We're down to our last viable embryo.
The baby is your business.
She took a home test.
I'm going to be a father.
Don't be afraid of me, John. You can do anything you want to me.
This isn't gonna happen. You out of your mind?
John,
no.
You need to be nicer to me. This is my baby. I will leave.
First thing that jumped out at me on this whole thing, if you're gonna go through the cost of medical procedures for a surrogate, you're going to go through the cost of lawyer procedures to protect yourself in a situation like this. When you have a surrogate who is hired in a contractual way to carry a couple's baby and they're going to implant an embryo that's not genetically hers, you don't just hope that she'll give up the baby when the time comes. You're compelled to give up the baby. That's how surrogacy works. Now, if she were to get pregnant or like somehow you didn't know, but a lot of times this stuff is not left a chance. Now, I understand that this is meant for people to see who don't know anything about the surrogacy process. And I get that. But I just have to watch it because I've known people who've gone through the surrogacy procedure. This is not, I mean, it takes weeks of testing and legal documents and everybody goes to the doctor and even like the partners of the people involved get tested for STDs and disorders and all that kind of stuff. So a proper surrogacy agreement is not done lightly. It's not like, you know, they had that movie, Baby Mama with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler about 10 years ago. And that one also played around with the surrogacy jokes as well. But I think that was just relying on a crazy woman. This one, the girl was, there's a little bit of her in the trailer. You can hear this girl sounds like she's like the worst actor ever. She delivers lines like Megan Fox in the trailer. If they can't cherry pick convincing lines that you've delivered in the movie to put in the trailer, you know you've got a stinker on your hands. So When the Bow Breaks looks absolutely like garbage. But what's funny is, doesn't it sound like that TV movie that Kristen Wiig and Will Ferrell did for Lifetime a couple of months ago? It just, this one looks like a stinker as well. So I'm going to have to say When the Bow Breaks, gotta suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the Disappointments Room. A woman moves into a deserted mansion only to discover something terrifying in one of the house's rooms.
You okay?
Yeah. Just, this room's not on the floor plans.
You got that look that concerns me.
Don't get sick again, Mommy.
There's no one else here.
I'm scared.
You know, I said earlier, I like horror movies. I want to support them. You know, you had Morgan last week that wasn't screened and didn't even have Thursday night screenings. And now this week you've got the Disappointments Room, which I don't know if it's a horror movie. The trailer certainly makes it feel like a horror movie. It might just be more technically suspense or thriller, but this would have been an interesting movie to see. The only thing is I look at this trailer and either the trailer's brilliant because it gives nothing away, or the movie's terrible because there's nothing to give away. It hinges on whatever's in that room, and there's nothing else to it. So either they kept the secret a secret, and it's just a gotcha at the end of the film, but I mean, it doesn't look like there's much to it. And I don't really know if I want to watch Kate Beckinsale. I like to watch Kate Beckinsale, but do I really want to watch her walking around in a shawl wringing her hands the whole time? Anyways, once again, the disappointments room, and I've heard it isn't getting a lot of good buzz when it played at festivals. It's going to have to suck because it wasn't screened.
It sucks.
That's it for this most depressing segment from Fat Guys at the Movies. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about two movies, Complete Unknown and Our Little Sister, which I wasn't able to review earlier. And then, of course, the box office and the home cinema roundup.
Shake that.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews. Let's get Our Little Sister out of the way first. This is a Japanese movie, so I'm not going to have a trailer to play because it's all in Japanese. And unless you know how to speak Japanese, you're not going to know what it says. It's just going to be music and a bunch of women talking, which is essentially what the movie is. But there's subtitles in the movie. Anyways, three sisters in Japan take on their half-sister after their father unexpectedly dies. This is kind of daring in terms culturally because it's very much a feminist movie. And you see these kind of movies coming out of Europe and coming out of America sometimes. But you don't see a whole lot of overt feminism in Japanese cinema. You see strong female characters, surprisingly enough. I mean, even, you know, you would expect from a culture that tends to be a lot more conservative in terms of gender roles, but you don't see a whole lot of heavy feminist stuff, at least making its way across the ocean to America. This is an entirely feminist movie. You know, you have the Bechdel test, where it tests whether or not, you know, two female characters talk to each other and it's not about a man. That goes on all over the place in this movie. And all of the characters in the movie that have any sort of importance are women. Unlike that movie Equity I talked about last week, which was almost absurd in how it did that, this one seems very natural, but it also busts not just sort of that conservative gender role cultural taboo, it also busts certain other cultural taboos. Like, one of the sisters is a little bit looser with her morals. She's sleeping with a guy and they're not married. They all live together in this house. And because it's a subtitle, it was a little hard to follow at times for me, because there are all these sisters talking. They don't all have the same mother. Some of them have the same share of the mother, but not all of them do. There's three of them that live there. And then the father went on to live with another woman and had this other daughter who's like 13. And when he dies, he had gotten remarried again, and that stepmother didn't want the daughter, so they invite her to live with them. And it is this very sweet story of these four or three women and one younger woman trying to live together, getting to know who they are. And it really shows female relationships. Now, at the same time, like you see in a lot of Japanese cinema, it's very restrained and it's very much saving face. And it doesn't show the uglier side of very private relationships. Look, I grew up with a sister and a mom. And I know you can't put two women in a house together and not have some fighting going on. Just as you can't put two guys in a house. You know, I butted heads with my dad. My sons butt heads with me. Tends to be the people of the same sex will tend to butt heads a lot more in a close quarters. You don't get to see any of that. It's told in a very polite way. And that's very common in Japanese cinema. You tend to see that a lot where the really ugly side of your exposed personal life doesn't come out. So that's missing. But it's ultimately a sweet little drama about these sisters sort of finding each other and finding themselves through finding each other. So I'm going to have to say Our Little Sister kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Complete Unknown. A man is shocked, I say, to discover that a woman who comes to his dinner party is his former lover who disappeared 15 years ago.
Tom, this is Alice Manning.
Nice to meet you.
Alice.
This is crazy. You're alive. Hey, come on, you completely disappeared for 15 years, and then you show up, tell this crazy story, and run out the door.
You don't understand the feeling. It's when everyone thinks they know who you are, then you're trapped.
This is a smaller, intimate film, and I love the fact that there is direct-to-video, VOD, there's DVD, and there's a very small platform theatrical releases still that allow these smaller, intimate films that cost probably well under $1 million to make can be made. It has very limited locations. It's got a couple houses of business and, you know, a couple street scenes. The rest of it is just Michael Shannon and Rachel Weisz and the other people that are knocking around the script. But it's a story of this guy finding this woman who he had a relationship with. Now, it's meant to be very sympathetic to this woman. She's meant to be, oh, isn't it sad? She gets wanderlust periodically and then goes and literally becomes a different person. And is sort of like that great imposter, only she's not out there scamming people. She's just living a life. And then when she's bored with that life or done with that life or feels she's stagnating, she moves. And that's a real thing. People have that wanderlust, that 7-year itch. They want to pick up and do something else every, you know, so many years or so many months. They treat that like that's just okay. And that's a different lifestyle that you can choose to live. And it's not judgmental, although I will say I'm going to be judgmental about it. That's not a healthy thing to do. You should not be just picking things up and abandoning your life, because if you don't put down roots, there's nowhere to go home. And, you know, the character, I don't know how old the character's supposed to be. Obviously, 15 years passed. So she's supposed to be probably in her 30s. Rachel Weisz is my age. She's in her mid-40s. When you get to be in your mid-40s, you can't just pick up and show up somewhere else. It's a lot harder to do that. And it does sort of ignore realities of traveling if you don't have the legitimate passport. I mean, Jason Bourne can do it, but he's a trained super soldier agent who can kill people with a book. But this is just a woman who pretends to be a lab technician. Each of them kind of pull each other, whereas Michael Shannon's very grounded and he's got a boring job, quite literally grounded, because he deals with land management. And she is, you know, Liberty Gibbet. She heads off and does her own thing, and she leaves when she feels like she's getting too attached. And so she teaches them a little bit to not be scared to move around, but I think she also feels regrets. Ultimately, I'm going to have to say that Complete Unknown kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I was correct. I said that Don't Breathe was going to make $10 million. Actually, I was low on that. It made 15 in the 3-day, almost 20 in the 4-day. That is an unprecedented hold for a horror movie. That's a 40% hold between the 3-day. You usually see horror movies drop 60% or more. That's because it's a great movie. And that's why it can go up against Morgan, Morgan didn't even break into the top 10. It was like barely in the top 20. But you can have the movie that was out the week before crush it at the box office, and it's a quality of film sort of thing. The Light Between Oceans came in at like number 8. Not even worth talking about. This week, I think Sully's going to be good for 30. I think Sully's going to be good for a couple reasons. There's no strong drama out there. You had The Light Between Oceans, but I don't think that clicked with the public. Sully is clicking. I'm getting people on the radio all over the place asking about this. There's a lot of people interested in it. I think it helps having it be Clint Eastwood's follow-up to American Sniper, so there's interest in that. I mean, $30 million isn't the American Sniper, what, $90 million it made in the opening weekend in January? But $30 million is very good. I think When the Bow Breaks is going to suffer a little bit because, you know, those sort of like those weekends that are reserved for a very limited group of people, they don't tend to pan out forever. It's sort of like the goose laying the golden eggs. At a certain point, that female-driven African-American audience is going to find something else to do that weekend. Or it's just going to sort of dissipate as a targeted weekend. So maybe 15 to 18 million. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous home cinema roundup. There's a couple new movies out this week you might want to check out. You've got Now You See Me 2, which wasn't very good, but it's a sequel. It's the sequel to Now You See Me. Did extremely well overseas. kind of bombed in America. Money Monster, which actually I thought was pretty good. Jodie Foster's film about a Jim Cramer kind of character played by George Clooney, who gets taken hostage on camera during live TV. There's also Tale of Tales, which is an anthology horror story that's hundreds of years old, and it's real out of the box. There's sort of these horror stories, so it's sort of like a Creepshow or a Cat's Eye, but seeding it with stories that predate electricity. There's one with Toby Jones, he falls in love with a flea that's like a flea the size of a Great Dane. And there's one of them with this Salma Hayek plays a woman who is jealous of her son's Prince and the Pauper lookalike friend, and she wants the prince to be princely. And of course, it's just sort of, it's all about every character who takes into negative action has consequences in a very dreadful, almost Lovecraftian way, where there's a certain degree of like body horror involved in it. You're not going to see anything else like it out there right now. Couple other ones to hit. You've got The Iron Giant is out on a collectible Blu-ray. There's also The Flash Season 2 if you want to catch up on the series before the new season starts. Supernatural Season 11 as well. Star Trek The 50th Anniversary Collection on Blu-ray. And South Park Season 19 before the new one starts just in a couple days. That is it for this week. I need to go. And next week I'm going to be talking about Blair Witch, a horror movie, which I'm kind of excited to see because it's directed by Adam Wingard. Also, Bridget Jones's Baby and Snowden. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.